On this day of Pentecost, we say, "Come, Holy Spirit, renew the face of the earth." But I would caution you to be careful what you ask for. The day of Pentecost is often considered the birthday of the church. But on that first Pentecost, it wasn't much of a church. Hard to even call it a church. It was more like a huddle. A group of people huddled in a circle, trying to figure out what they were going to do, trying to keep a low profile, hiding for fear of the Jews and also the Romans. Trouble every which way they turned. So they had the doors locked. This image has special significance in our time when we consider those people in our country who, because of recent tactics of ICE, are afraid to leave their homes, afraid to open the door, who themselves are hiding behind locked doors. That church in the upper room had a leader, but this church did not have a building. They did not have a staff, nor a vestry. They did not have a choir or a Sunday school. They were gathering in the upper room. Did they own the upper room or the house in which the upper room was found? No, not even that. They were borrowing it. As churches go, they were not in good shape. Fearful and hiding, they were in the worst shape ever. Yet the only thing they really had and the only thing they really needed was the Holy Spirit. But the Holy Spirit was not exactly what they bargained for, not necessarily what they had in mind. What, after all, is the Holy Spirit? Tongues of fire? An advocate? The third person of the Trinity? What does that mean? The Holy Spirit was and is none other than the full expression of love between the Father and the Son. The full expression of love between the Father and the Son. Jesus told them about this. He warned them it was coming. But until they experienced it, until this love visited them in their bodies and in their minds, entered their souls, they really had no idea what Jesus was talking about. And still, we have trouble describing this love in words. As the text of the hymn, "Come Down, O Love Divine," tells us, which we will hear in the anthem later during the service, in that hymn it says, "This love far surpasses the power of human telling, for none can guess its grace, to love create a place wherein the Holy Spirit makes a dwelling." There are a couple of Greek words that approach what is going on in the upper room. Now, I am not a fan of gratuitous Greek-quoting preachers who try to impress people that they understand a bit of Greek. I do not. I took Hebrew in seminary. But in this case, there are no words in English that quite get at describing the Holy Spirit. The coming of the Holy Spirit was ecstasis, which is where we get the word ecstatic. Ecstatic is a Greek word, and it means outward reaching, to be or stand outside oneself. The love of God was so intense they could not hold it in. It burst forth from them. They could do nothing but love in response. The other word that is helpful for our understanding of the Holy Spirit, also a Greek word, is perichoresis, which means something like swirling around or circulating. Ecstatic and perichoresis. The Holy Spirit could not be contained. In Hebrew, they called it ruach, which means wind and breath. We simply don't have words for the Holy Spirit, perhaps in any language. The other important thing about the gift of the Holy Spirit is that it was not for the disciples. It was not so that they could stay huddled in the upper room, that first church, and enjoy the memories they had of Jesus and bask in the love that they had for one another. The Holy Spirit did not call the apostles together for their own sake. The Holy Spirit was given for the world. She was expressed through those first apostles, but not for them to keep or contain or preserve. Her ecstatic love was for mission. Mission, I fear, might be a word we have kicked down the road a few too many times. We might remember it better or have a better understanding of the word mission when we refer to something like the mission to the moon. That's the sense of mission that goes somewhere, not something static like a mission statement. Because mission is not about what we believe or stand for. A mission is what we do. The apostles left the upper room and went out and preached the gospel. Soon, Christians were known primarily for what they did. Christians began to have a reputation. First of all, Christians were the ones who shared everything in common. Christians were the ones in the ancient world who rescued abandoned newborns. A common practice in the ancient world was to expose an unwanted baby to the elements, leave them on a hilltop someplace, especially girls. Christians had a reputation for rescuing these abandoned children and raising them as their own. Christians were also the ones who refused military service because they were nonviolent in every way. Christians were the ones who sang songs in prison camps. They were the ones who, when a horrible plague came and everyone fled, Christians were the ones who stayed behind to care for the sick. Christians were the ones who picked up the dying people on the streets of Calcutta. Christians began to have a reputation. This begs the question for us. What is our reputation in the world? Do we have one? Is it the sort of reputation that is a manifestation of the coming of the Holy Spirit? The mission given in the gift of the Holy Spirit was to spread the ecstatic love around to the ends of the earth. In an embrace of compassion for others, the gift was like the incarnation all over again. God becoming human in an embrace of compassion for all of humanity. Now the apostles were given this same self-sacrificing compassion, this deep need to make the love of God known. There was a document produced by the Church of England in 2004, which seems a long time ago now, entitled A Mission-Shaped Church. It says, the Church of God, it is not a church of God with a mission in the world, but a God of mission with a church in the world. I better say that again. It is not a church of God with a mission in the world, but a God of mission with a church in the world. God of mission, swirling, circulating around, outward, ever outward. The implications for us today are fairly obvious, though things are not always as they appear. Sometimes when the church appears the strongest in terms of all that it has in its possession, it has also lost its mission. And sometimes when the church looks on the brink of failure, it rediscovers the divine crucible of the overpowering love we call the Holy Spirit. And she, the church, rediscovers her mission. There are a myriad of examples of this, wherein just when the church looks to be at its worst point, on the verge of collapse even, somehow we become better receptors of the Holy Spirit. Somehow we put down our pencils writing mission statements and remember our mission and go out to increase the love of God in the world. And then the correct orientation as we go forth is to invoke and embrace the God of mission who happens to have a church in the world. So come, Holy Spirit, renew the face of that world.